And this is Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash. Mexico will never be the piñata of any foreign government, said its new president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, known as AMLO. His positions, as we understand it thus far, on the renegotiated NAFTA trade agreement and immigration. We're joined by Laura Carlson, the director of the America's Policy Program Center for International Policy. She's based in Mexico City. It's good to have you back with us, Laura.
Well, it's good to be back.
Well, I must say there are many things that, of course, give us deep concern about the issues that abound between Mexico and the U.S. at this juncture. But certainly what has been the most controversial and problematic are the issues that are unfolding on the border. Now, I want to just perhaps you can shed some light on this. One of the things that I picked up from some Mexican newspapers was that there was deep animosity on the Mexican side of the border against the caravanistas, if you will. And there was even a suggestion that they were really a construct of the Peña Nieto government to create dissension and undermine AMLO at this point. What exactly do we understand, and what is the progressive position or the position of, we hope, Mexicans relevant to the caravans that have been traversing through the Mexican territory heading to the U.S.-Mexico border?
Well, Mexico border, actually since October 12th, when it left San Pedro Sula in Honduras, the vast majority of the people on the caravan are Hondurans. The reception in Mexico has been mixed because, on the one hand, we've seen a lot of people in Mexico in small towns, in big cities, especially here in Mexico City, where the people in the caravan remained for several days in a sports arena that was outfitted to hold them, tremendous amount of solidarity. You know, a very open and generous attitude toward people who are fleeing persecution, violence, and hunger in their home countries. However, we also have seen the opposite. There, especially on social media, have been a number of images or messages against the caravan, saying that Mexico can't take them, xenophobic and racist comments regarding the caravan, and that's been even more marked when they did get to the border to Tijuana, because there the mayor, who's a right-wing mayor, formally made a number of xenophobic statements, and Tijuana's getting a little stressed. This isn't the first group of migrants that has arrived in the border city to wait to see what their fates will be as they request asylum in the United States. There have been a particularly large community of Haitians and Africans who have really assimilated into the community there, but this group, which is now estimated to be at nearly 6,000 people of Central Americans in Tijuana, is causing a number of tensions. It's a very, very difficult situation because, on the one hand, there are the humanitarian needs, and that could be relatively easily resolved with a combination of civil society creating options for these people and a real willingness on the part of the government to take care of basic needs. That's not a problem that's unresolvable. The other problem, though, where do they go from there, is much more difficult. The Trump administration, as you know, has closed off options, including options for asylum. They tried to close off the option, which is internationally validated, of crossing the border anywhere and requesting asylum. And they have named, under Jeff Sessions, before he left, a number of criteria to try to limit the situations and the criteria itself for, under which people can request asylum in the United States. They even eliminated domestic violence and gang violence, which applies to a large number of these families. So their chances, realistically speaking, are pretty slim of getting across. Many, many people know that, and yet the dream lives on. And they really just, they have it very fixed in their minds that getting to the United States, finding their family that's already established there, will finally be a safe place to raise their children. The Mexican government has reacted with a combination of repression and more conciliatory language and measures under Peña Nieto. And the new president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, has said from the very beginning that his plan is, first of all, to create jobs and allow people to stay, anyone who wants to stay in Mexico. He's a strong believer that forced migration should not leave people with no refuge in the world, and that much of what's happening from Central America is forced migration. And then on the other hand, look at some of the development reasons and the situations of violence that exist, especially in Honduras since the coup, and in other Central American countries as well, and try to resolve those to begin to decrease the number of people who feel they have to flee.
And I wondered just if you could flesh out a little bit more. You focused on the Hondurans, but certainly there's a considerable number of Guatemalans too. And I know that, of course, Trump was tweeting to the Hondurans and the Guatemalans that what he wants is to sanction them if they allow the caravan to cross their borders, etc. I'm wondering if you can flesh out a little bit more about what might be the kind of prickly points or the issues for the Mexican Honduran and Mexican Guatemalan relationships in terms of state-to-state concerns at this point.
It's important to note that the very same day of the inauguration, the Secretary of Foreign Relations signed an integral development pact with the presidents of Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, precisely to begin to work on reducing the circumstances under which families, and we're seeing a lot of families, women and children, and other migrants decide to leave their countries. We don't have the details of this, but it's interesting because the United States was not involved and because this government has taken a different approach. When you mentioned the fact of trying to crack down or even sanction the Guatemalan and Honduran governments for letting their people leave, which, of course, is an internationally recognized right, you know, under every convention that civilized nations have signed, you're talking about the Trump policy of hardening borders everywhere, especially the U.S. borders, but hardening borders everywhere. That means also a military crackdown at Mexico's southern border with Guatemala, to treat migrants that are coming over the border as criminals, to hunt them down, to prevent them from coming across a border that's actually been well traversed and accepted for decades and decades, and also a border that was crossed frequently by refugees who were accepted into Mexico during the dirty wars promoted by the United States government in the 80s. So this has been a break with traditional Mexican policy. The new government's talking about going back to a policy of receiving refugees, while at the same time trying to work with those governments to reduce the conditions that force them to migrate. It's going to be very difficult in many ways because of the pressure from the United States to take a more punitive and repressive approach to immigration, and to continue both the language and the practical implementation of criminalization against migrants throughout the region, and also because all these governments have such a high degree of corruption and a high degree of dependency on the United States. So it gives them not a lot of room to move and to develop different strategies, but we're beginning to see some indications that they will go towards providing for humanitarian needs, accepting the concept of refugees, and rejecting much of that criminalization that's coming from a white supremacist government in the United States.
Now, Trump is trying to say, or is saying, that the migrants should not come into the United States, that they should wait on the border on the southern side in Mexico, and that they would be interviewed for their asylum claims. What's the position of the new leader in Mexico?
Well, let me break that down first. In Trump's declaration, when he wanted to make it impossible to ask for asylum, and in many of his tweets and other statements lately, he acts as though crossing the border to request asylum is a crime. It's not at all. It's entirely legal, and in fact, it's a very, very important protection that has existed since persecution of refugees caused thousands and thousands of deaths of men, women, and children in the Second World War in particular. And then secondly, we don't really know the position of the Mexican government 100% on that yet. What they have said, there's two proposals. One is called Third Safe Country. A Third Safe Country agreement means that if refugees or asylum seekers leave their country and first go into a nation that's considered safe, they're required to request asylum there. That would mean that people basically going through Mexico could not request asylum in the United States. They'd have to request it in Mexico. That eliminates motivations of family reunification, because so many families live in the United States, and it violates the right of the refugee to choose where they think they're going to be safest to raise their families. There's also serious questions about whether Mexico is a safe place for migrants, as we know from the numbers of attacks, assassinations, and rapes of individuals on the migration trail through Mexico. The other agreement that you mentioned is called Stay in Mexico, and it means that they can request asylum in the United States, but while their hearings are being processed, they would go back to Mexico and wait there for an answer. Now, that's just absurd. It essentially means that the United States government would be asking Mexico to become a giant detention center for people awaiting their asylum hearings in the United States. The Mexican government has been the new government, in fact, has been a little bit unclear about its response to this. There's some indication that they'd be willing to go for some kind of a quid pro quo that would involve the United States Trump administration funding some of Andrés Manuel López Obrador's favorite projects or signature development projects in southern Mexico in return for keeping asylum seekers here in Mexico in what could be up to a year to 2 years because of the backlog and the refusal to process these people in an expedite manner in the United States. But they've also said that they don't want to do the United States dirty work, and some individuals in the new government have indicated that they wouldn't accept that plan. So human rights organizations and migrant support organizations here, including shelters, who have really gotten together since this caravan began because of the urgency of formulating a response, have been very, very clear that neither the Third Safe Country nor the Remain in Mexico programs are acceptable to Mexico in terms of refugee rights and also in terms of just defense of national sovereignty, not having to do favors for the United States where this anti-immigrant government is really kind of just hoping that all these desperate people will just disappear.
Now, in fact, Mexico's southern border has been there's really been a steady increase of checkpoints and detention centers and guards. Now, while we certainly don't expect AMLO to pay for Trump's wall either, he did publish a book called Oye Trump, Listen Up Trump, and he has condemned Trump's plans to build a border wall. Nevertheless, I was struck at, and I want to know what you think about the Mexican side of the question. I mean, recently watching the government sending riot police to the border to prevent the migrants from crossing, the images of these black-clad security forces using their shield against mothers and babies was, of course, shocking and disturbing. Now, they are not all Guatemalan, and they are not all Hondurans. So your sense of how AMLO proceeds with the dire poverty in Mexico and the inordinate amount of violence there from dealing with Mexicans who are seeking to leave and to immigrate to the United States.
The repression happened, yeah, on several occasions during the crossing of the caravan or the exodus through Mexico. And there were some very brutal reports of federal police in particular trying to block the migrants. Andrés Manuel López Obrador has said that he will not revert to repressive measures of this kind, and that the situation, you know, in Central America has to be dealt with from the roots, going to development. The concerns there's a couple of very, very serious concerns in what he's said so far. One is that he's continuing the use of the military and, in fact, is giving them a leadership role within a newly, the proposal is a reformed legislative legal framework to participate in the war on drugs, in domestic policing. All human rights organizations, national and international, have said repeatedly that the armed forces should not be involved in domestic policing. There's legions of human rights violations reports that have been filed against the Army and the Navy since they began to be involved in this. And they've also been involved on the southern border. The southern border plan, which was implemented by Peña Nieto and Obama after the unaccompanied minors, I don't want to call it a crisis because it's been going on for a long time, but the media blitz, basically, in 2014 is still going full swing with the militarization of the southern border, and we haven't seen a clear statement that that would be changed. There's a tremendous amount of pressure from the Pentagon. This started under John Kelly, former SOUTHCOM commander. And there's pressure from the Pentagon, there's pressure from the U.S. government to continue doing this. And we've seen in the tweets that Trump won't hesitate to threaten Mexico with closing down its border, a particularly effective threat, even though it would have almost as much negative impact on the U.S. economy as it would on Mexico, and on other forms of retaliation if Mexico doesn't begin to treat migrants as a national security threat the way that the United States does. But what everything that we know about who these people are and why they're going through Mexico and heading toward the United States is that they're desperate, that they're refugees, and that there's no way whatsoever they could be construed as a national security threat either to Mexico or to the United States.
Changing gears just a bit, the NAFTA was renegotiated. From the Mexican point of view, what are the changes in the new NAFTA agreement, or NAFTA 2.0, that are different? How does it affect Mexicans, especially workers?
Or what they're calling the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
Yeah, they take free out of there.
Yeah, they took free trade out, and they took North America out. They're no longer even really seeing it as a region, but just an agreement that finally these three individual nations with very different interests and with their very different domestic policies and governments could agree on. I mean, it's kind of a lowest common denominator renegotiation that Donald Trump wanted to get out because it was a campaign promise and the midterms were coming out, and the other countries basically just wanted to get over with because they knew they weren't going to get a much better agreement out of the Trump administration. They were afraid they would get a much worse agreement, or that if they came up with no agreement, they could face severe economic consequences. Now, what happened in the end was an agreement that has some advances in getting rid of investor state dispute tribunals that were very pro-corporate, and in formally recognizing labor rights as part of the agreement, and particularly mandating that Mexico recognize labor rights. The problem is that the labor rights are not enforceable, that they didn't, while they put in, you know, elimination of protection contracts and fair wages and the right to organize in Mexico, they did not, for example, respond to Canada's request to strike right-to-work states in the United States, a clear violation of the right to organize freely. or go any farther in terms of wages in the three countries or corporate responsibilities to workers. So it's limited. It's still a neoliberal economic agreement. It's unsure whether it will pass in the United States and Mexico. The best thing they can do now is to wait out and see what the political fallout is in the United States in the process of ratification, and then make a decision. The attitude of the López Obrador government is clearly, again, to get it over with. They actually sent a negotiator into the renegotiation. They came out saying that they felt it was a good deal. They had to suffer. They saw how the nation suffered a lot in financial markets every time Trump threatened to pull out. So there's a real fear there that an element of economic uncertainty, such as the failure of the renegotiation, could throw a real monkey wrench into some of their plans for economic reforms and development in Mexico as the government begins.
And the old NAFTA really decimated the farmers in Mexico. Does this change this anyway, or will they still be flooded by U.S. agriculture?
In agriculture, there aren't any real improvements. And in fact, the small farm sector was one of the few that continued to demand that agriculture be removed from the free trade agreement. It really had no business being ruled by an international market, commodities markets, and was a matter of national security and national strategy that should be decided. The policy should be decided by the government itself. Of course, they didn't get that. And so they have agreed to support the López Obrador, the AMLO government, in the free trade agreement so far, because they're working together on a platform of support, and he's promised other areas of support to small farmers. However, they continue to believe that agriculture should not be a part of the free trade agreement and continue to work on building their connections with Canadian and U.S. small farmers who have also suffered under a corporate-dominated sector that drives small farmers out of business.
And one of the things that maybe you can tie together for us, I must say that when I hear somebody saying Trump called the teamwork fantastic, it just strikes at me given how reactionary Trump is. But notwithstanding that, Mexicans are living below the poverty line. It's estimated that 7.6% live in extreme poverty. An estimated 44% are living in poverty. How do you think that, and how does AMLO, as much as we can understand, believe that this trade agreement now in any way can carve away at or effectuate some relief for this enormously impoverished and unemployed sector of the Mexican working class?
I don't think that they really do. You know, it's completely contradictory to support NAFTA and claim that you're going to change the neoliberal model. It's still anybody's guess as to how profoundly they intend to actually change the neoliberal model. But to believe that NAFTA is an important tool in pulling people out of poverty, and some of those estimates go up to over half the population living below the poverty line, I think would be a stretch. What they want is to create enough economic stability that they can begin to implement some of the reforms and some of the social programs that they actually do think would change people's lives, the lives of the poor people. He reiterated again his campaign slogan from 2006, saying that his government will address the needs of all sectors of the population, but first the poor, which was the campaign slogan then. And so NAFTA is something that they don't want to talk a lot about because they know it's a contradiction and yet are really concerned that the cost of, of NAFTA going under or of pulling out of NAFTA or of NAFTA failing at some point in financial markets and among investors could be a devastating blow to the government.
Well, we don't have time to explore all the issues, but certainly the crowd was vibrant. There seems to be enormous enthusiasm, and there's got to be a change, a demonstrative change from the Peño. I keep doing that. I am not pronouncing it correctly. Help me, Laura.
The Peña Nieto.
Thank you, government. And your sentiment on, at this point, what you do know of AMLO, of Andrés Manuel López Obrador, what's your expectation?
I think that there could be some very important changes in Mexico. We've seen it in other Latin American countries with center-left governments. We've seen a backlash as well. But for now, focusing on this redistribution on of wealth, focusing on a fairer government, but particularly focusing on this issue of corruption and impunity, could make relatively rapid and effective changes within the Mexican government. It's difficult to judge what kind of resistance among the right wing and the economic and political elite there will be. We know that there'll be a lot of support in the international community as Mexico tries to address problems that other countries are facing as well, and also will eventually have to try to stand up to the Trump administration. But his biggest asset so far is, as you've mentioned, the support of the vast majority of the population. They not only voted for him, but what you could see in the Zócalo, in the Central Plaza, on Inauguration Day, was that they believe in the project and they're willing to support it on many levels, from their daily, you know, their daily lives to the kinds of political support that may need in elections and in the vote to revoke his mandate. He promised a vote to see if people wanted to revoke his mandate halfway through the elections to just make sure he was kind of on the right track. And those people mobilized and vocal in terms of implementing some of these reforms and standing up to the status quo to do that will probably be the biggest source of support of the new government.
Laura Carlson, the director of the America's Policy Program Center for International Policy, based in Mexico City. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
It's always a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.